Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of my soon-to-be-released The Living Spirit Answers for Healing and Infinite Love. And today I welcome Dr. Eric Luthorth, author of Red Devil 4, a novel based on his work as a neurosurgeon and leader in the field of neuroprosthetics, offering his vision of a futuristic world where computer chips implanted in our brains take the place of cell phones and tablets, and where knowledge acquisition is instantaneous and neuroprosthetics have the power to cure any neurological impairment. Wouldn't that be nice? Hello, Dr. Luthorth.
How are you? Thank you very much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Eric, as listeners from Healing From Within know, this show and the guests are leaders in the field of science, medicine, energy, healing, quantum physics, and we all seek to open a dialogue between the various disciplines and understand dimensions of past, present, and future to further advance our concepts about who we are, where we come from, and how we may evolve into more conscious and awakened human and spiritual beings as a result of both normal evolution and technological advancements. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Dr. Luthorth will share how the next technological revolution has begun and how the distinction between the human mind and computers is evolving into a new level of connectedness. Whether these innovations will make our lives better or worse will depend upon us. Great science has the capacity to do great harm, warns Dr. Luthorth. The same innate human capacity that allowed our ancestors to create and adapt tools to master the environment has brought us to the edge, where human nature may be changed in fundamental ways and new and impressive capacities never seen in the history of our species will become commonplace. The goal is now to recognize the pitfalls and maximize the benefits, and that is what we will focus on today.
So Cheryl, well, thank you very much for that very kind of robust and insightful kind of introduction. You really hit on some of the key points, but where should we start?
Well, we'll start at the beginning, because I bet you had an interesting earlier life or childhood filled with imaginations and possibilities. Did your interest in science fiction and medicine begin then?
It certainly did. It was funny. I was actually kind of a wild and crazy kid, and actually got in lots of trouble, had problems with authority, and was always taken apart, toys and Ataris and machines, and always getting in trouble for it. And actually, I think where I really had a fundamental kind of life-shifting experience was my mom got really kind of tired of having me in detention all the time. And actually, she put me in a neurosurgery laboratory early in high school. And from that point on, I started working with growing neurons on a plate. I actually got to sit in and watch neurosurgeries. And really, kind of the notion of kind of neuroscience really consumed me. And interestingly, my scientific mentor at that time was one of the most intelligent, brilliant people that I met, but he was also extremely deeply spiritual, which is a rare combination that you find. And that really fostered a lot of not only wanting to understand how the brain works, but also kind of, what's the meaning behind it. And that really led me in college to studying both biology and theology at the same time.
Eric, let me say something here. I don't think it's as hard to find any longer as we would think. And I think if we look back in history, we find many of the great writers and scientists and people in medicine had these ideas. And perhaps it was just not appropriate at that time to talk about it. But you were very lucky to find a mentor like that. And I think you are that kind of person now, deeply aware of our reason for being here and having a spiritual life and merging our soul energy and our mind and technology to become the best and most compassionate human beings we are. And I know as a child you were probably quite sensitive. Aside from being a little mischievous and bright, I'm sure you believed, like I did, that anything the mind could think of could be achieved. Because I remember Star Trek and seeing that transporter room where the molecules jumbled.
Absolutely.
And I could see that happening. I didn't doubt it, not for a minute.
I think that's exactly right. I think imagination precedes reality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why, for instance, when I think back to the books that influenced me, whether they were Isaac Asimov, who wrote the Robot series, or Frank Herbert, who wrote the Dune series, or all the different science fiction writers, they really crystallized in me the optimism of what is possible, you know, and those really set me on a stage that when I did experience neuroscience, when I did experience real science, that it was kind of like, this is how we make our imagination real.
Yeah.
And that was, in some senses, a part of the reason that I wanted to write a novel in the first place. Because, again, I do a lot of serious medicine and science. I'm a neurosurgeon. I also run an engineering lab where we literally make brain-computer interfaces on a daily basis. If you come into my laboratory, you'll see people playing video games with their thoughts alone. We have clinical trials to restore function in people with strokes. But kind of part of that kind of really just big plan is I think I'm convincing the scientific community that this is a reality. But I also wanted to really talk about this in a greater picture and a greater story. And just if you reference whether it be the Bible or whether, you know, a lot of really great and fundamental stories that have influenced our thinking, they're told in the form of a story. That allows us to own the concepts. That allows us to kind of interact with the concepts that are talked about in our own terms, in human terms. And that, you know, in Red Devil, my book is a thriller. There's moments that it's where you say, oh, wow, that's an amazing future. And there's going to be moments when you're just going to say, oh, wow, that is about as scary as it gets.
I didn't expect the end, and I'm an intuitive. I did not expect it quite to end the way it did, and it was great, and I loved it. And, you know, my new book, The Living Spirit, which is about answers for healing and infinite love, like your book, Red Devil 4, they really strive to show how the creative force of science and spirituality lead to great strides in understanding our human intelligence and evolution. And don't we all want to know where we came from and what's coming next? So let's begin
right.
with, yes, that's what we're all trying to figure out one way or another. So let's begin with a summary of your novel and some of the main characters that are in the book and facing life with these advanced technological tools.
Sounds great. So first, the world is set 40 years from now in 2053. And everybody has a brain implant, and those have really replaced cell phones, tablets, as you mentioned. But instead of using your punch code or your keyboard, that really your thoughts are your new access to the world, and that you can download experiences, you can download the real physical experience as if it was an iTunes. You can talk to other people with your thoughts alone. Essentially, you have an infinite access to information. And in this world, which is set in St. Louis, there's a series of very disturbing murders that happen, and they're all patients of this main character, Hagen Mayorichi, and he's a neurosurgeon scientist, and he's got his own troubles. You know, he's struggling and striving to create a new type of artificial intelligence.
A
young boy intellect. His name's Omid, that's right. And he's trying to teach him consciousness. And so, but in the process of that, these murders happen. And Hagen meets these two detectives. One, his name's Krantz, and he's kind of a grouchy old detective who's really struggling, as a lot of us do, to just deal with the rapidly emerging technology. And his partner's the exact opposite. Her name's Tara. Tara Desner. She's a former Navy SEAL. She's completely wired in. Her brain's connected to her motorcycle. Her brain's connected to all these different forms of information. And she's almost superhuman. And very quickly it becomes apparent that these murders are being committed by Hagen's patients. And they're these very prominent people who have no real reason to be killing people. And they've got to figure out what's going on with their brain implants. But also Hagen has to figure out, because he's becoming the prime suspect. And so kind of in the process, as they're trying to figure it out, they really realize that there's a bigger emerging crisis that's about to happen. If they don't figure this out, a real catastrophe is going to happen.
All right. So, well, What are, Eric, some of your concerns about this advancing technology, and how do you hope these advancements will either advance or harm society? What do you see as the possibilities there?
I think in this era of neurotech, neuroscience, that we, just like when we learned how to split the atom, just like we've learned to decode our human DNA, that you really have the possibility for amazing advances as well as amazing harms. And I actually think with great science, you never get one or the other. It's always both.
Do you have children? And
I do.
Okay. How would you like parents and children to view these advances in the use of cell phone, computers, and all these electronic influences to promote health and well-being?
So first off, in terms of promoting health, I think neuroprosthetics, brain-computer interfaces, have an amazing capacity for a new era of neural restoration, meaning putting things back that we've lost, whether it be with stroke, whether it be with Alzheimer's disease, whether it be with problems that we're born with, autism, attention deficit disorders, things where there's an imbalance and incorrect processing that I think as we understand the brain, we can start to put things back and right them. So I think that we really have the ability for restorative neuroscience where we can really start to fix problems that we've always thought were unfixable, that meaning once the glass is broken, we can't put it back together.
Well, I like that a lot, restorative and using it to help people have a better quality of life. But now there's a new show, and you are aware of it, Intelligence, and
Absolutely.
There's an agent in the show, and he has had a brain chip implanted, which lets him tap into all the information, and they actually physically show it on the show, so you can feel like you're seeing it also. He can actually walk into, like virtual reality, into a picture, see all the people, and gather all the information about them. Now, I think it's great, but I also see on the show that he's having a bit of a problem with his relationship with his partner, who happens to be a woman. And he feels himself that since he's the only one, he's not quite so human anymore. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you really touch on some important themes, is that as our connectedness increases, I think, again, there's a good and a bad, that, for instance, we may have enhanced ability to communicate with each other. Maybe we can really have a true shared perspective, meaning I can understand and feel your feelings. I can understand your perspective from your eyes. And that actually gives one the potential for an extraordinary improvement in relationships. Now, but there's also the dark side. So, for instance, people can escape from humanity. If you can truly experience virtual realities, and I've got a character in my book called Trent, and he's handicapped, and he really is afraid to interact with humans, and so he really loses himself in the virtual world to the point that he loses connectedness with his family and with humans. And so you really have, again, the extreme of both ends being possible. And so, again, this is why, again, in the book, I call it a cautionary tale, because let's think about these things now to see how much in one direction are we want to go versus how much of a direction we get forced to go, whether it means less.
Well, that's it. Now I happen to have been talking to a little boy who must have been about 9 years old, and I asked him how he would feel about having a little chip in his head that would let him see all his machines at one time. And he looked at me like I was a little strange and shook his head no. He was frightened by it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure has not seen the show Intelligence. And he just was making a gut reaction to something because he knows he has to shut his machines off sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he was thinking, I'll never be able to shut it off. How will I sleep? How will I eat? So these are concerns that have to be addressed. With the good aspects, we have to realize we still must remain have our privacy.
Absolutely.
And have our quiet time and our downtime. And as long as that's maintained, I don't see too much of a problem. Now, for a long time, I've been saying to people the last few years, pretty soon we won't need our credit cards. We'll just have a little chip. I show them my wrist and I say, oh, it'll be right here on my wrist and all my information. And I'm just going to not have to go into my pocketbook, wallet, whatever. It'll all be there. And I kind of don't see that as anything but positive.
Well, I think you are hitting all the highlights in that privacy is central, because I think we really consider our mind our own domain.
Yes.
That it is the sacrosanct location where we can be alone with our thoughts. We can think. And again, that's one of the really kind of more frightening elements of my book, is what happens when somebody can gain access to that, not only to listen in, but to manipulate.
Yes.
That's where, and this fear of having that privacy invaded really has transited, you know, thousands of years. The whole notion of possession, you know, and exorcism, these things that a demon gets in you and affects your thinking and it creates behaviors that you would normally do with your body, that is a fundamental fear that we always have. So privacy is one of these things that is going to be an absolute central element as these technologies come online.
I think that what you showed also in the book, there was a character, the chameleon.
That's right.
Who was glowing with all the different technology and drugs he was taking at the same time.
I
imagine there were drugs. And he was a frightening, unthinking, mindless character with nothing but his own greed and physical needs to be met. That's another thing we have to concern ourselves, to have conscious citizens working for the betterment of humanity and everyone is the ideal. And it's the ideal, it's the work that I do also as an intuitive energy practitioner and medium. I'm able to access a great deal of information with my mind from a higher source. Now, people don't always understand when I give them a reading where I'm getting this information from. But just like the internet or computers or the chips that you're talking about that will be eventually in people's brains to give them a better understanding and way to be empathic and feel other people's thoughts and emotions, I'm already doing it without the chip.
Don't doubt that you are. And I think one of the neat things about kind of whether it be a human or even whether it be an artificial intelligence, as you get to a certain level of complexity, that you start to see emergent properties that go beyond the sum of its parts. And that, in some senses, you see that in my character, Omid, you know, who's an artificial intelligence. He actually goes beyond the fact that he's just a bunch of chips. And again, without giving too much of the book away, you really see that at the end.
Yes, yes. So we'll go on to the great scientific fiction writer that you mentioned, Isaac Asimov, and what he described only 50 years ago. People didn't believe him at the time, probably, or couldn't see the bigger picture, much like some of the things we're talking about here, which I know are only not that far away. I mean, you're already using some of it.
That's right.
Tell us something about that science fiction writer who obviously interests you, and we're working like he's working. What did he describe 50 years ago?
So many of the things that Isaac Asimov talked about 50 years ago really have come to pass. So, I mean, obviously, one of the things that he talked about just really in extraordinary depth was robots and how they would affect our lives. And we're really seeing that come to pass, whether it be all the robots that work in factories, the robots that we're seeing in our daily lives, that we now have robots that are vacuum cleaners. And he really saw that far beyond when any of that was a reality. The other things were kind of artificial intelligence, and he created rules for artificial intelligence that are still used to this day as people are programming computer languages and starting to create actual artificial intelligence. And the other thing that he predicted was nanotech.
We're using that word a lot now, and I need a little bit more information on it for myself personally.
Absolutely. So this idea of nanotech is that creating very, very small machines and technologies that are literally made up of the size of molecules and atoms that can have very specific properties can, to a degree, almost have magical properties, because once you get that small, they can do things that whether it be to chemicals, to alter light, to create various forms of kind of tech, you know, again, any type of technology, whether it be computer chips, processing of information, micro robots that can swim through our bloodstreams, different types of robots that can move through our bowels and take pictures. I mean, it really...
That's fantastic. That'll help in healing a lot of the diseases.
That's
eventually,
exactly right.
Medicine will be carried that way to specific...
That's exactly... The laboratories will be inside us. And
wow.
And he really predicted that a long, long time ago. And so, and again, he was a really seminal influence on me that, you know, what he imagined influenced a lot of children who became scientists who made it happen. And similarly, I really wanted to create a world where we kind of could see it, feel it, taste it, have it wow us, have it scare us, and so that we could really start to create a next generation of what that world is going to look like. And I actually even created my own laws of artificial intelligence, building on his work in the book, if you remember reading them, and that, you know, when Isaac Asimov imagined kind of an artificially intelligent robot, he imagined them as a physical thing, meaning that it would be a robot that would be smart. But really, as we see the world of the internet exploding, that we have a whole kind of reality that sits upon our physical reality, it's completely possible to have an intelligent being live in the internet or live in a computer. And so how do we deal with that and how it relates to our world and our real life? And
we don't want it to be like the Terminator.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Whereas it takes over and we have a war with the machine. So that's part of the problem that we need to deal with. Because where you create any form of intelligence, ultimately they're going to perhaps want power, like man has had many battles over power. And your book does have many themes beyond just technology. So can you tell us several other themes that are represented?
Absolutely. So certainly the relationship of creator with created, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of relationships of fathers and sons throughout my book. You know, how do you... And sometimes that's a troubled relationship. And how do you reconcile?
That was Trent.
Trent
with his father.
That's exactly
Trent,
right.
Trent, the disabled boy. Yes, you had father and son relationships.
And also with Hagen and Omid, you know, the artificial intelligence that he created.
Then you had marriage. You had...
Absolutely, marriage and relationships. And, you know, and also the whole theme of duty, meaning that, you know, doing what's right and doing what you're supposed to do and how sometimes that conflicts with what you want to do and what feels good and what doesn't feel good, and how Hagen really struggled between his career, his desire to create artificial intelligence to help humanity, while at the same time having real troubles in his marriage to figure out how to balance his home life and his work life.
Well,
and that really...
Love was a very important theme, too, as a force for creation at his work and in his relationship. Of course, it wasn't his work that was the only problem with his relationship. They were just maybe not physically or emotionally compatible. They struggled.
They really struggled.
They didn't. And what you're saying here is that sometimes changes have to be made for the highest good of all. And that
That's
was
exactly right.
Another theme in your book. And you also had the theme of loneliness and bitterness and being treated as an inferior person because of disabilities.
That's exactly right. And how it's isolating. And I think that, again, one of the themes that, you know, I think critically important throughout, you'll see the problems that it's important that we be connected. And really, you know, there's a number of arcs of characters who are isolated in their own sort of way. Trent was isolated by both his disability as well as his perception of his disability.
Yes.
Because he didn't have to be isolated. But it led him to being isolated. As well as Hagen's isolation with his artificial intelligence and the isolation he had at work. And that actually, in some senses, disabled him and disabled his ability to have a functioning relationship in his marriage. And how a lot of these people... As did Omid throughout the story, their salvation was in connection.
Yes.
And so the more they became connected, that is actually what led them, in some senses, to kind of a resolution of their problems.
Well, you also showed the evangelist or religion versus the evolutionist or scientist, free will versus free choice. Which again is a theme that we're talking about right here. Now, this is a futuristic world, and in the story, I saw in one part women appear to be still seen as sexual objects and subjugated to the money, power, and abuse of some men. So there seemed to be, for 40 years down the road, in that one little part of the story, little improvement in the evolution between male and female relationships and or the abuse of power and money. Now, I know you are for this evolution and everything working in an improved capacity for all of us. So what would you hope an advanced technological world would offer women as well as men?
That is great. And maybe to cite that, one of my strongest characters was Tara. And if you remember, she was an ex-Navy SEAL.
Yes.
Currently, we don't have female Navy SEALs. And so, you know, that technological evolution not only gives us neat skills and neat access, it provides us with a leveling field where basically our minds are strong, what makes us strong, not our physical bodies. And so, you know, she's an extraordinary individual in that she has an incredible Navy SEAL strong mind.
You know, you also gave an example of poor parenting in regard to Tara, and it seemed she was rethinking a time when she was a little girl following her father who was
away. Right.
You remember that part?
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know where he really failed was, again, just to describe the scene, is that she grew up on a farm and she had this very strong, pig-headed father who was somewhat unforgiving, not gentle.
Right.
And she's walking along a field, and again, she's a little girl in her dress, and he's kind of, you know, lumbering ahead, and she falls and, you know, just skins her knee. And for her as a child, that really was a scary moment, but her father would have none of it.
But I think you showed that story for a reason, because you wanted to possibly show what she was going to become as a result of that poor parenting.
Yeah, well, he really drove her to become dutiful. That, you know, his motto was, your word is your bond.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, this gets at this notion of duty, the challenge of duty in human relationships, where basically, you know, she was always compelled by her father to be stronger, to be better. And in a lot of ways, she was. She was, you know, the top of her game, and she became a Navy SEAL. But what happened was where she fell apart and had her fall, which she subsequently had to recover from, was that in that strength, in that duty, that her husband became sick, and she couldn't go home because some of her team partners in her Navy SEAL squad, would have died as a result. And there was this internal conflict of personal relationship versus duty of work.
But she was the woman of today and the future.
That's
and
right.
Looking for men and women to work together using all their abilities, technology, personal talents. And I very much liked her as a character, but I was also very saddened by the woman at the beginning of the book who was selling herself, you know, for drugs, and that a chameleon was using that kind of behavior. I mean, I know it's still in the world, but I would hope as we become more involved, we could phase out some of those thoughts.
I hope so too.
I do hope for that to become the way. I cannot sometimes understand how we're so technologically advanced and so still in the physical world, sometimes working in the past, such primitive.
You know how I think about
behavior.
It is that, well, I think technology is racing at a pace that's unprecedented in human history. One of the things that doesn't change are some of the fundamentals of human nature.
That's it. Yes.
And I think that's where we struggle in a lot of ways, is that reconcile, because our human nature, you know, there's times I think we're noble, there's times I think we're weak, and there's times that, you know, we can do amazing things, and there's times that we don't, and we do the opposite, we do terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And technology is essentially an amplification of that, where, you know, 10,000 years ago, all we had was sticks and stones and fire to enact our human nature, kind of enact our ability to kind of, you know, either be selfish or generous. Now we have extraordinary capabilities, but they still are built upon our human nature. But I think it is, quite honestly. I think generally speaking, humans treat other humans better than they did 2,000 years ago. But I think human evolution, the evolution of our behavior, is in some sense slower than our ability to make tools and technology. And so that's where we get into trouble.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And I want to thank you, Dr. Eric Luthorth, author of Red Devil 4, for sharing an interesting look at the possibilities for the new technology that is rapidly entering the public spheres and our everyday lives in order to view both the good and bad aspects that may accompany such tremendous changes ahead as we search for higher intelligence and progress, both as a means to evolve our physical and spiritual lives. Please go to tor-forge.com for more information on purchasing Red Devil 4. In summarizing this episode of Healing from Within, we, as always, explore the union of past, present, and future events to observe our evolution as sensory and intelligent human beings with the capacity for self-actualization and self-mastery of our human emotions, while refining our energetic or spiritual aspects. At the end of this fictional novel, Red Devil 4, what seemed like technology on the verge of destroying our human instincts was actually saved by Omid, Dr. Hagen Myeris's artificial intelligent robot who saved a human life, and at that moment of surrendering his own being, delivered a message of love and hope to Trent, the disabled and embittered young man we spoke about earlier. This robot, Omid, had downloaded the deepest longings and feelings of the doctor who had created him and was able to sacrifice his own existence when he realized the doctor was sacrificing his own personal growth by devoting all his time to his work. Just as an enlightened human being would hopefully do this for another human being, Omid, a man-made intelligence, said before his death, "My creation and development prevented what all humans need to be happy, to be in a relationship, to be connected to other people. We are communal beings, and when we shut ourselves off, we become machines, alone and isolated. Therefore, it may take computer technology or artificial intelligence to teach us that to love others is the most human value and need. Therefore, the best of the human condition need not be lost when we advance to artificial intelligent life beings, if we remember that fact and seek to empower our children and all creation with the values of higher consciousness and love." I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing from Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to hear leaders in the field of evolving technology and the many techniques and views offered for the improvement and advancement of our human potential and collective needs. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.
Thank you very much.